we're living in. Let me tell ya. And it's a world that men can eat at all. When things are big that should be small. Who can tell what magic spells we'll be doing for us? And I'm giving up my love to this world, only to be told I can't see, I can't breathe, nor my will we be. And nothing's gonna change the way we live, cause we can always take but never give. And now the things are changing for the worse. See, whoa, it's a crazy world we're living in, and I just can't see it.
Tomorrow. Well, well. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And that was the same music I played yesterday. I had in mind to play something else and I forgot to change it. But that was, again, Jamiroquai, a group that I really like. And I like this particular song by them, Virtual Insanity. We're going to talk about virtual insanity as it happens today. And as you know, we've been talking about this current situation that we are in, teetering on the brink of war. There's every effort being made to calm the nation down, to make it appear that, well, things aren't ideal, but, you know, they're proceeding. There's movement, and there's talking, and some attempt at negotiation. But in any event, the flames are not nearly as high as they were a couple of days ago. But we still can't take that as any kind of assurance that sane minds are prevailing in the White House. In fact, within his first 100 days in office, President Donald Trump has accomplished what no other president has. He committed an act of war by bombing one country, Syria. He has dispatched an armada, as he calls it, in preparation for possible war with another country, North Korea. And he has threatened a superpower with wartime sanctions for continuing to support what he says is an enemy country, again, Syria. All this in less than 100 days in office, and all three occurring in close proximity to each other in terms of time. The president clearly has a taste for war, and it seems insatiable. It also seems that he has free rein to customize his war menu, and he's being allowed to do so. We've been discussing President Chaos, as I call him, his recent military misadventures, and the potentially cataclysmic consequences that could result. But today we'll be concentrating on the question, whatever happened to so-called systems of checks and balances against despotic presidential power, especially the power to put the nation at risk of war? Well, here's the president talking in a way about his feelings about war. He's describing that it is a pity that the United States has lost the zeal for winning wars. Here he is.
We must ensure that our courageous service men and women have the tools they need to deter war, and when called upon to fight in our name, only do one thing, win. We have to win. We have to start winning wars again. I have to say, when I was young in high school and college, everybody used to say, we never lost a war. We never lost a war. You remember. Some of you are right there with me, and you remember, we never lost a war. America never lost. And now, we never win a war. We never win. And we don't fight to win. We don't fight to win. So we either got to win or don't fight it at all. But where we are, 17 years, almost 17 years of fighting in the Middle East, we're up, I saw a chart the other day, as of about a month ago, $6 trillion we've spent in the Middle East. $6 trillion. And I want to tell you, that's just unacceptable. And we're nowhere. Actually, if you think about it, we're less than nowhere. The Middle East is far worse than it was 16, 17 years ago. There's not even a contest. So we've spent $6 trillion. We have a hornet's nest. It's a mess like you've never seen before. We're nowhere. So we're going to straighten it out.
Well, of course we're going to straighten it out, and he is the guy to do that. And he began to straighten things out, and of course we see where we are. Well, that short snippet betrays so many things about Donald Trump and the super simplistic analysis and the super simplistic way in which he sees the world. And, of course, as a man who takes great pride in never having read a book, you can see the evidence there that the commander-in-chief is completely oblivious to history, and certainly the history of U.S. diplomacy. But here's the thing. This isn't about winning a war. The question that we have been asking and we have been addressing is about the constitutionality of this war. That he has proceeded, he has placed the country on course to continue this war in Syria. And we do appreciate, don't we, that we live in a world of rules, of laws. And certainly at home here in the United States, we have laws that help to shield the people against an erratic and crazy president doing precisely these kinds of things to, in the end, put the entire nation, all of us, at risk. Not only would we then be guilty of flouting international and our own national laws, but we will suffer. We will suffer terribly, because the world has grown up as well in a way that America never imagined. It used to think that a small nation, compared to the United States, for example, a smaller nation, yeah, you could just swat them like a fly whenever you feel like, and there will be no repercussions. I think it's safe to say we have seen evidence that that no longer applies. Small nations has nothing to do with the size of nations. It has to do with their technology to wage war, their resolve to wage war, whether we approve of their reasoning or we don't. But the United States, in these three instances that I just talked about, appears not to be interested in following the rule of law. Did the president legally and constitutionally bomb Syria? Experts are saying no. Some are saying, well, as long as he could show that Syria, if it continued, if the war situation in Syria continued, inevitably it will have compromised U.S. interests. It's a very specious argument, but they're making it just the same. In order to give even more legal wiggle room to Donald Trump, so that post facto, he may have some kind of a, you know, some kind of a defense for his actions. But there's no question, to my mind, that the attack on Syria was unconstitutional as it relates to U.S. law. We do have something called the War Powers Resolution, which compels the president to consult with Congress, since Congress, not the president, Congress is the only authority, as at least in terms of the United States, that legally can declare war. The president hasn't come before Congress, and the Congress doesn't seem to mind. It seems actually to be relieved not to confront this question. And conveniently, of course, they're all now holy. They're off for a two-week break in the middle of a crisis. In the middle of a crisis of global proportions, in which the key actor happens to be the President of the United States. He's provoking three wars, actually four, three separate wars with these three different nations, Syria, Russia, and North Korea. And by extension, he's provoking World War III. It is to the credit of both Russia and to some degree even Syria that has been attacked that they have constrained themselves so as not to make this issue of a third world war inevitable. And here we have our president, you know, running all over the place, talking, shooting his mouth off, talking about what we ought to do is we're winning. So we're fighting wars to prove that we are winning. And he's complete, like Mr. Magoo, completely oblivious to all of the damage he's causing and all of the incentive he's giving to other nations to say, okay, now you have crossed the line and you want war, you got war. So, we're going to talk today about why it is that in the midst of this crisis, it's now an international crisis, despite the fact that the mainstream media are acting as if, well, you know, it was a little hiccup, but all things are okay. Don't worry. You know, we have our Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, running from pillar to post, trying to talk or posture as if the United States is interested in talking and so forth. The United States isn't interested in talking. The safeguard that we have had so far in all of this is that they are exercising extreme caution and control. The other nations who who the guns are aimed at, they are the ones exercising extreme control. You think Russia is not equipped to fight the United States? We really should believe this? They understand the implications of their actions, even if they were to do it as a defense mechanism. And within their rights, since they are supporting a country that is being assailed by the United States for no reason, except that there are plans to take Assad down and out, and there are plans to, once he is gone, which the only one of the main reasons he hasn't yet gone is that he is supported principally by Iran and by Russia. Because everybody has been given permission, this is part of the plan, everybody has been given permission to go to Syria and fight. And the hope is that even though they're fighting among themselves, the main target is taking down the administration, the government of Bashar al-Assad. And in the creation of the vacuum of leadership, then they have total free reign of the country. Groups like al-Nusra and al-Qaeda will have what they've been looking for. They want a caliphate. They want a country of their own. That's how they'll get it. And once they have a country of their own, no matter how they get it, the main thing is to get it. They have their land. They take over somebody's land, and now other hell can break loose. They now can lay claim to resources of the land, such as oil, such as mineral wealth, such as the space to build a whole new country from the wreckage of the country that they themselves caused. But we have a president who is not a thinker, who doesn't read books, and he's very proud about that. And his whole thing, which is like a really tired chorus that he has been singing since the election, about winning, 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 winning. He hasn't been winning since he entered office. He hasn't been winning. But this war would give him a chance to be seen as winning, to revive his whole mantra that he's a winning president. Despite the fact that we are as close to World War III as we ever have been as a nation. And the troublesome part, again, is that there appears to be no system of checks and balances. Congress refuses to take this president on. Congress refuses to enforce the law and to hold the president accountable to the law. In this case, Donald Trump will not be the first president allowed to do whatever they want to do. Well, Obama did it also in Syria. We had in recent years Bill Clinton doing the same thing, getting away with the bombing of Kosovo, without any, without a peep from Congress in terms of enforcing the applicability of the War Powers Resolution. In the international community, we don't see very much resistance either. They're letting the president do whatever he wants to do. In fact, they are blatantly and openly siding with him. They're not even being neutral. And I'm not saying that they're, you know, what we are discussing is the only way to see the picture. But my gosh, you can't let somebody just pop up and say, okay, we're going to be bombing country X. And as an international body, duly constituted to put some order in the world, rather than say, hey, did you move right with your actions? Are you in accordance with what was agreed upon and how all nations should behave? Rather than do that, they automatically have decided that the United States must be right. It couldn't be any different from what the U.S. says. And we have a long and documented history of the lies that the United States has said. A long history that should make every statement it makes on an international level and even a domestic level, as we know with Trump, immediately suspect. And it should be reviewed and investigated 20 times over. So what is happening here? So we have no resistance. In fact, that means implicit permission from Congress, both the Democrats and Republicans, and those who say they're independents as well. We have across the board approval through silence in Congress at a time when the country has been put through. I mean, nobody voted on this. Nobody approved that the president should put us in this situation. Like I said, the media already has accomplished a great task of calming the nation down. Yes, it was just a little bombing. A couple of bombs were dropped. Don't worry about it. It's no big deal. You know, it's Muslims, for crying out loud. Do we need to worry about a Muslim nation? Look, they were long overdue. So they got what they deserved, but we don't need to be exasperated about it. We're on the edge of three wars. We have already seen the president mobilizing behind these three military incursions that he's considering, which will trigger the big one, the ultimate war. And we're so calm about it. No resistance whatsoever in Congress, where, in fact, the battle should be fought. They're the ones who ratified this law. They're the ones who saw the need to put checks on a despotic president, who is likely, by his own accord, to take the nation down the road to hell. Do we hear anything of a plan to compel the president to come before Congress and account for the military incursion that he already has committed by authorizing by himself the bombing of a sovereign nation, and contemplating two other actions that could just finish off the whole thing with Russia and with North Korea? We have no answer, no action from Congress except a pitiful, symbolic plea by Nancy Pelosi that, you know, they should really have a discussion about this. And that's as far as it went. That's as much muscle as that got. But now they're busy because, you know, Easter, and Jesus must be praised. They're all being very holy right now, taking some time off to celebrate the reincarnation of the Lord. The resurrection of the Lord. Okay, so we're going to talk about this today. We're not seeing in any regulatory body that one would expect a brisk review and a clear-cut intention to curtail the actions of the United States. We are not seeing a vigorous discussion among constitutionalists about whether the president's actions are in accord with the U.S. Constitution. We're not seeing the duly elected members of Congress, with Congress being the only authority to legitimately and legally sanction war and acts of war. Nothing is happening there. So basically, we are just entertaining Donald Trump's desire for a varied menu of war. He's got an army, a navy, an air force, and all kinds of stuff. He's got hundreds of thousands of soldiers, and he can play. He could play war all day long with somebody else's children. And we are letting him get away with it. He has not come under close scrutiny and criticism yet. And he has done this. He hasn't hidden it. He's done it in our faces, in the face of Congress. And nobody yet has had the courage to say, this is not going to happen. We'll take a break and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888 right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, we're discussing the troubling absence of anybody exercising supervisory authority over a renegade president. And not only has he already engaged in an act of war in Syria, he is looking to engage in war with Russia and North Korea. And supposedly we have mechanisms that automatically should kick in the United States, specifically with the War Resolutions Act, that should prohibit the president from acting on his own and putting the entire nation at risk of war. Yvette from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question. The masses of people that are in this country, do they not vote for the people in Congress?
Well, of course.
Okay, so just like we had the demonstration with the women, I'm wondering, where are the people now putting a demonstration against what's going on, calling their congresspeople? I don't understand. There's no real movement here, I don't think. And who gets that started?
No, it doesn't seem so. It seems as if the standing procedure is, unless it's flagrant war, I mean, the kind of cataclysmic war that destroys the entire nation, unless they get, that message from Trump. But I think they, by implication, they consider the U.S. attack on Syria being, small change. Nothing to worry about.
Okay, so you're saying that basically us as citizens, we're just sleeping right now. We don't get it. We don't get the implications.
I think the citizens get the implications. I'm saying the citizens who do get the implications have a duty to ask, what is going on here that Congress isn't doing its job?
Right. So that means more people need to call their Congress members. Is that true?
I guess so. The main thing is to face the question, to raise the question nationally. We have to have this question looked at. I mean, if supposedly we have internal mechanisms to keep a president in check so that he doesn't get up in the morning and says, today's a great day to attack Spain. And then, because he has the power as commander-in-chief, proceeds to order the attack on Spain.
Right.
That is not how it's supposed to work.
Right. But nobody's saying anything. And I'm saying, my question to you is then, is it that the masses of the people, the citizenry, are we all sleeping? Are we not calling and saying what's going on? You need to say something. Maybe that's why they're not moving.
There ought to be an investigation. There ought to be some kind of way to compel Donald Trump to answer how it is that he decided to use his authority as commander-in-chief in a situation where it is universally agreed that there is no proof that the Assad regime engaged in this poison gas attack. And number two, they don't even know what kind of poison gas it is. There has yet to be a definitive proof about what happened there, who did what.
Right.
So we have a president who says, I think Assad did it, and therefore I'm going to go get him.
Right.
This is not the way it's supposed to happen.
Right. All right. Well, that's what I was just wondering. I'm just figuring that there's no demonstration on the part of people either. I mean, so it's like
I
you
think
said,
in
it's
part,
like everybody just thinks it's not.
I agree with that, and I think it's in part because the media are doing their thing so well. They are encouraging people to remain calm. There's no reason for alarm about this. There's no reason to think that the sky is falling. Everything is under control, and we move on to the next thing. By next week, this wouldn't even be a blip on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, because I noticed that even if I try to engage people on my local level, everyone seems to think, it's fine to spend money to upgrade military. And my question is, to what end do you see this? And no one ever has a discussion that I see this as being the end of or wars, and no one gets there. They just say, no, it's technology. We need to be advanced. We need to get there. And it's like crazy. I don't get anybody that really sees the urgency in any of this.
That's the thing. And we need to see the urgency of it. Thanks so much, Yvette, for your call today. Maat from New York, you're on the air.
Yes. Hotep, beloved family.
Thank you. This is certainly a kettle of fish. That's quite right, no question. But I want to pull back some in the respect. I was very young during the Cuban Missile Crisis under JFK and how he got tricked and bamboozled by the CIA initially. But in looking at it from a historical point, I feel that we might say that that was even a greater risk of World War II. And then growing up in New York City and going to elementary school, the very much contrived Cold War where we had drills and we had to get under our desks as if that would be protection against a nuclear a strike on New York, it might also be an instance where, you know, the ratcheting up of World War III was almost very deliberate. But my point in terms of your larger question or concern, until we understand that the U.S. has experienced its own Reichstag fire in terms of September 11, 2001, and what the floodgates that that opened up in terms of the Constitution that you're referring to. Because I went online at some point and I read some of the orders that George W. Bush signed. And one of those orders was that he could kill anybody, anywhere on the planet after 9/11, although it didn't have to be someone who was associated in any way. I mean, this was the actual language of that order, executive order, whatever it was. That he could kill. And, of course, we have our Lockheed, the son of our Lockheed, who was actually invited into the Pentagon one day.
But we're dealing with a very direct question. As we speak right now, the United States has dropped what it describes as the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan. Now, you see the escalation, which is occurring because Congress is not doing its job. If you want to say, well, the U.S. saw a need to engage ISIS in Afghanistan, well, fine. Bring it to Congress, which is where our system says it must be resolved. You don't just decide, because you don't just do this in a 10-minute thing. You have to contemplate doing this. You have to prepare to do this, which means there's a period of time in which it can be discussed and reviewed and either permitted by law or by consensus of opinion or whatever it is, however it works. But right now, Trump has enlarged the theater of war. This is how they described it. The mother of all bombs. Now, if just think for a minute. When a government behaves this way, do you really think there will be no repercussions for this kind of behavior?
Well, if I could respond to that, there are absolute repercussions. And one repercussion that is not widely known is a report I heard last night on Rachel Maddow that in Syria there is a base called Al-Tanf, T-A-N-F, and it's a base where it's where Jordan, Iraq, and Syria intersect, that triangle. It's a base of U.S. troops being based there. They have 1,000-plus, Trump has added some more, and there's some allies working with those troops. After Trump took the position of not just so-called going against ISIS, but actually striking the Syrian government itself, that base was attacked.
And three of the, I guess the U.S. troops said they went into the desert, but the Syrian U.S. allies, three of them were killed. So that's one big consequence. And
the consequence I'm talking about goes beyond three people being killed. I'm talking about the world being killed. I'm not exaggerating here, and I'm not being, alarmist. But Donald Trump, we know him to have some problems. And he seems able to do whatever he wants to do, whenever he wants to do it and however he wants to do it, because he's the president. And this mealy-mouthed Congress, including the people who say they're so anti-war, they have yet to say, hey, wait a minute, you can't do this. We forbid the president to break the law. Like I said, do we now think it's now gone back into Afghanistan with the mother of all bombs? This has happened within the last half hour.
Wow. I wasn't aware of that. But
this is a question we have to deal with. Who is or how is it going to be done that the president is kept in check? Who is going to do it? And do we not see a major reason that somebody should be concerned about this and make it a high agenda, urgent item?
Well, I guess you can also say that when we saw Donald Trump being put in a position, we really could have seen this coming. I mean, someone who brags about having never read a book and a rogue, a liar, and ignorant
fool.
He's
not the only one. You know, Barack Obama read books. Bill Clinton read books, and they all basically dismissed Congress as being, this is what I want to do. And even if I now put every American life on the line, they'll just have to trust that I know what I'm doing, and I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm asking, what the heck is going on? Why have a War Powers Act? Why have laws if presidents at their whim could do whatever they want? And I said, consider as of now, Donald Trump has enlarged his involvement in the so-called Middle East with this attack on Afghanistan. Thanks for your call. I'm sorry?
I just want to make some last point. Until we get to the root of where we are now, and that root is the U.S. version of the Reichstag fire, the official story being so improbable that we need to look at the improbability of that or the impossibility of that as dealing with the truth of why we're so involved in the Middle East. And that's my last comment, and thank you.
Fine. I agree with you. We also have to look at why we are so involved in all these different military incursions in other places. The immediate task I see is stopping Donald Trump from making unilateral decisions like this, which put us in greater harm and greater danger than ever before. Thank you. Lincoln, you're calling from Mount Vernon. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
Great. Contrary to you and many other people, this was not a unilateral decision. Donald Trump is only the mouthpiece of the powers that be. And
well, you
Donald
know what I'm
Trump,
saying? I'm saying it in the sense that he is the head of state. He is the commander-in-chief. In that regard, it is his decision. So we have to make him responsible for his decision. That does not mean that I disagree with you at all. I'm real clear that there are a whole bunch of hands that are behind this decision. But proceed.
But well, I understand where you're going, but I wanted, you see, I think that when we speak, we have to really, at all times, be trying to get to the complexities of things. Because for one, the population is so shallow-minded that if we just speak like them, then we're going to play into the shallow-mindedness, and we're going to actually encourage them to continue to be shallow-minded. And what I mean by this when I said Donald Trump did what he did, first of all, Donald Trump did not do it because he wanted to do it. He did it because he realized how his situation was getting worse and worse. And he had to ingratiate himself with Pentagon and with the other powers. So when he did that, and plus, you know, he's erratic, etc. And he's gullible, he's narrow-minded, and so, you know, they have just who they want. But it was no different than what Obama did when he announced that he killed bin Laden. And when Obama announced that he killed bin Laden, he was appealing to the lowest, least common denominator in the USA. You remember, that was just around the time when election was about to occur, when Obama announced.
But you're giving me a good scenic tour. I want you to address the specific question on the table. Why has Donald Trump, the president of the United States, been allowed to conduct these operations without Congress serving as some form of checks and balances here?
When Obama invaded Libya, he did not get any approval from Congress. When Bush invaded Iraq, was the same thing. And one of the reasons is because of the nature of America and not just the government, but also the people. Let's go back to Vietnam. You see, when we discuss these things, we can't just discuss them separately by themselves. We have to discuss them in the context of history. When I used to notice that whenever anyone spoke about our involvement in Vietnam, you know what they always said? Even the so-called progressive, they used to say about Vietnam, it's a war we could not win. Therefore, what they were saying is, if the war is a so-called winnable war, it was okay for us to invade. They didn't get mad about Vietnam until American soldiers started dying. And that this present situation, it is no worse than when Bush invaded Iraq, and no worse than when Obama invaded.
Granted, but we're not
Libya.
Doing comparative. We're not doing comparative analysis here. We're doing. We're trying to address a specific situation. I do not disagree with you on the idea that we cannot make certain judgments without appreciating the environment or the historic aspects of the issue. I agree with that. Unfortunately, we are talking now about a specific. The specific is a president of the United States. Like other presidents, I said that in the program, at the top of the program. It's not the first time a president has done such renegade actions, right? But insofar, we have a president now, this would be the fourth military a proposition he has made. He has made real on one. This is his fourth intervention that he is carrying out. This is the second one now, actually, I should say. This mother of all bombs dropped in Afghanistan. So in less than 100 days in office, and he has mobilized just about every aspect of the U.S. Armed Forces in these adventures that he's undertaking on his own. Nobody seems to be able to stop it.
You, Therese, I think that for you to keep saying that, you're missing the point. He is not doing this on his own.
I got it. I said it before. I said this about Donald Trump being brought to the realization just before he took office and after he took office. I made it clear. Donald Trump will soon learn who actually runs this country.
Right. So we
so
have
I'm
to
not
keep
naive
the, we
about
have to
it.
Keep speaking in that context.
But I'm saying I'm not naive about it. Whether he has the assistance of the military, of the intelligence community, and my question still remains as a single issue question. Who is going to stop the President of the United States in the sense that he is a commander-in-chief, and now this is the fourth military incursion in less than 100 days?
You want to hear the answer?
That's why I asked the question.
The answer is, hello?
That's why I asked a question, I said. I would want to hear answers.
I have the answer, but I had to say that so that we know within the realm of which was the answer is we the people have to unite and shut down the country. And when I say unite, we have to understand that the true power is in the hands of the people. And if we could mobilize the entire population to say we will not go to work, we will not do anything, because it's the civilians who support the military, and if civilians say we will not do anything, we shut down this country. And show them who really runs the country, or who should run the country. And that's where we need to be. And the only way we could be that way is if we could enlighten the population of America.
Well, that's why we asked the questions. And that's why you offered a very cogent answer. Thank you so much, Lincoln, for your call today. Michael from New Jersey, what are you thinking? Michael? Okay, so
well, this is beyond
we lost
thought.
Because... Oh, there you are.
Yes, hello?
Hi, Michael. You have a short time, I'm afraid.
Okay. I think this is all about greed, and there's a huge loophole that's called national security that allows Trump to, just abuse the law, just do what he wants. I mean, generally, human nature, man wants to act, but supposedly we're a country of laws, not men. But when you have national security, you can become a man and act as you wish without any reference to the law. So as once you say national security, the law is whatever you make it to keep the people safe. If you want to drop the greatest non-nuclear weapon that man has created, you do it. And this is what's happening. And the laws were supposed to restrain power, but, he has just taken the reins of power. And I think this all presidents have done this to some extent. And
I don't know if it is that he has taken the reins of power. I think it is also that Congress has given it to him. They have just laid down and refused to do their job. This is the whole point. This is not something that is, an elective. This is what they're supposed to do.
You
cannot have a president doing these kinds of things.
McCain, who are just lobbyists for the military-industrial complex, to try to get as much money as possible to keep these never-ending wars going.
We're out of time. I'm so sorry. Please do call tomorrow and complete your thought. Really, it was a bit unfair that you didn't have the time to complete your thought today. And as you know, I like people completing their thoughts. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at Lead Stories, LEID Stories, plural, @gmail.com. Now, you see, and I don't say this boastfully, but the discussions we've been having, how pertinent they are, and they have been ahead of these kinds of developments. So it's important that we talk. It's important that we express ourselves, because somewhere in the middle of all of that, we would arrive at a truth that we cannot deny, and we will know just what our role is in our society when these things happen without our permission. Thanks so much for joining me today. And let's look forward to tomorrow, Friday, Free Your Mind Friday. We open up the spigots so we can hear what you have to say. Thanks again. Bye-bye.